So, hey, everybody, welcome to the virtual online Zoom launch for the Tiku anthology. Ooh, it doesn't sound nearly as exciting when everyone's muted, but that's okay. We see the hands waving and all that. So first question I have to everybody, and you can unmute yourself to ask this, who got their samples of the Poetry and actually tried them? I see some hands waves and some thumbs up. It's like, I'm having the green tea right now. Oh, there's a heart over there. That's cool. So, Tiku, poems about tea. Basically, Nick, if he's here, I know he's here. Is he unmuted?
I'm here. Unmuted? You're there. I'm not muted. Hello, everybody.
Hey, Nick. Nick and I have always had a thing for tea. We have the poetry, and we always have philosophical conversations about how poetry and tea kind of go hand in hand, because they're both, a form of meditation. when you're writing a poem or reading a poem, the idea is to escape for a little bit. And tea is also a form of meditation, and sometimes they
go. Can you help me with the video?
Ooh, I hear a person.
Oh, never mind. Sorry.
Oh, it's Heidi Hallett, everybody. Hi, Heidi. So we were just asking everybody, did you get your sample of Poet Tea and try it? Yeah. Oh, now she's muted. See, this is the thing with virtual events. There's all these buttons to do. So we have that. Nick, you want to say anything about the correlations between poetry and tea before we get to the reading?
Well, yeah, I mean, it goes back a really long time. In fact, there's a famous ancient Chinese poet from, I want to say it was the 8th century, who actually wrote a book that was like the definitive guide on how to prepare tea. So he's got a famous poem about tea that's been translated a million different ways. So yeah, the connection is more than just that people in the modern day like to drink tea while they're reading poetry. It goes back a really long time.
Yeah, it was also really important in the Japanese tradition of haiku, which even though haiku in the form we know it didn't actually exist until the mid-1800s, they were writing haiku, all the way back to like the year 1300. And, that's where the haiku masters came from. And one of them, one of the really prominent haiku masters was a guy named Kobayashi Issa, or sometimes just called Issa. And Issa literally means cup of tea. So he kind of took the whole poetry and tea thing pretty important. So let's get to reading some of these. So the first one on the list, although she just went black and silent there, is actually Tammy Green. Tammy, you want to read yours first?
Oh, wow. First one. Okay. Thank you for that honor. So I have two short haikus here for the wonderful tea. Thank you, James. The first one's called Kappa. The leaves dive and swirl, infuse earthy aromas. The taste of a thousand stars. Relief. Next one's relief. Breathe deeply this steam, scented brew of fruit and earth. Comfort and refresh. Thanks.
I know the applause doesn't sound as thunderous when everybody's got their mics muted. You know what? I need to look up like a sound effect for applause around here. You were the first one to reply in the email you wanted to read, so that's how we do the order of who reads. The great thing about those two haiku or poems and so many of them in this is that reading them I actually think like, yeah, I could relate to that while drinking tea. So next here, Linda Simone, are you ready to read?
I'm ready.
You're ready.
So I'm coming to you from San Antonio, Texas, by way of New York City, actually. Okay, two poems, two haiku. Sachet of oolong, mallard dips head in river, autumn afternoon. And then the second one, immerse leaves, then strain, fan out to completely dry, your fortune awaits. Thank you.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of funny because like these type poems are, they're so short, but there's so much in them. That's why it's an art that's been kind of handled for, like some people, particularly with like the Japanese death poems, for example, which was usually three or four lines, they would take decades to write them. So It's like so many poems that we actually do today. It's like we write like these 3-5 minute sermons with so much in there, and it's like, you know, like for a long time, like, you know, the masters, it's like they have like such concise small lines, and they just, you know, with so few words pack so much into it. So it was, you know, really cool, and just also kind of a juxtaposition between our the cultures, so to speak. So let's see who else is here, because I have a list of the people who said they wanted to read, and then the list of people who's actually here. So Sherry, you want to read?
Hi, sure. Hi, everybody. Good to see you. And it's lovely to hear everybody's poems. And James, you did a beautiful job. It's gorgeous. I love it. I love the sentiment of it. The idea of bringing meditation and art and poetry and something as peaceful as tea together is a brilliant idea. So I'm really glad to be a part of it. Thank you.
Thank you.
If you want to follow along, my short haiku is on page 37. Deep soil slumber nests, allow brilliant bloom reveals, a steep tea release. Thank you.
If any of you feel like unmuting for the clapping, you can, because... You know, just saying. But yeah, no, thank you for being a part of it, Sherry. Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, it was one of those things where it's just like, you know, I've done tea and poetry so many times, I'm thinking, well, other poets have to be doing the same thing, so let's see what they have to say about it. So let's see who's on the list and who's actually here. Ari Rubin, you're up.
Thank you. I love tea, and actually tea is essential to my writing process. Like, I cannot write without tea. It used to be whiskey when I was younger, but then it kind of changed to tea. So I was really into this book. You guys might not recognize me without the hat I usually wear to the readings, but it doesn't fit over the headphones, and you wouldn't be able to hear me above all the other noise in the place without them on. So I have two also. I'm going to get them up here. This is the first one. Green tea in April, the leaves blossom in my cup, hope springs eternal. Mm-hmm. And then I have another one, and the second one is actually my favorite one. To be a monkey high in the Wuyi Mountains, tea drunk and happy. So. Yeah, I've always been a big fan of oolong teas. There's just so much complexity and range in an oolong tea that you don't get from either a green tea or a black tea necessarily.
Yeah, the interesting thing about tea is how, you know, most of it comes from the same leaf, but it's just the altitude and the oxidization, you know, and how it's prepared that really kind of changes it. You know, which actually is similar in a lot of ways to, you know, different types of poetry forms, because another thing that's interesting, you know, I know that tea primarily is grown in China, but in Japan, and we all know that the Chinese culture influenced Japanese culture quite a lot over the years with poetry as well. But in Japanese poetry, for example, you have a lot of forms that are, you know, 5, 7, and 5 syllables, which is like what we in English, you know, American mistakenly just assume all of that's haiku. But, you know, and some people know, like, okay, there's a senryu also, but there's actually a whole category of poems that are 5, 7, 5. And, you know, there's the haiku, the senryu, the seppai, then there's the hoku, which actually was a start of a much longer poem, the renga or other collaborative verses. Actually, Basho, who was a big haiku master, was mostly writing hoku that just happened to fit all the later criteria for haiku, which is why he was the haiku master. But the funny thing about it is that, like, in a lot of other, like, more European poetry forms, it's more the, you know, like the rhyme and the meter and the syllable structure determines what type of poem it is, and they're all like different. But in a lot of Japanese poetry, the 5, 7, 5, it's the same syllable structure, but it's the content of the poem that determines what it is, like whether it's about nature or human nature, you know, things like that. So it's like, it kind of like tea, it all comes from the same leaf, but how you handle it and prepare it determines what it actually is. So that's pretty interesting. And actually, speaking of tea drunk, because that was in your poem, Nick, would you like to take a minute to explain to everybody who might not know what tea drunkenness is?
Sure. And I have to say, we oolongs, best oolongs also. So tea has several different compounds in it. L-theanine is probably the biggest one that when you drink enough of it, it relaxes you and gives you sort of a calming meditative feeling that's come to be described as sort of like a floaty, happy feeling that people, they like to call it tea drunk. In China, there's this whole idea of the cha qi, or the energy of the tea, and different types of tea will give you different sort of body sensations if you drink enough of it, based on the types of compounds that and the quantity of the compounds that the tea contains. So teas that are higher in theanine will tend to give you more of that feeling. So like shade grown green teas or really aged teas.
And funny story relating to Poet Tea with that, which I can't confirm this, but I suspect, because we started Poet Tea all the way back in 2014. And I think it was about, you know, a couple of years after that, first it started with the three flavors, the red, the green, and the black. But then we added the white tea or snowy evening. And white tea is one of the teas we, you know, you actually more commonly to get tea drunkenness from. But it also has a lot to do with, you know, how long the tea has been aged. And so there's, you know, like when you like tea doesn't really expire. You know, sometimes it loses its potency over time, but never like goes bad, so to speak. But so the first batch of Snowy Evening, I had some of it left over, and that was all I had. And like, a couple of years later at a poetry event, one of the people there was like, you know, hey, can I get like some of that white tea? And like, you know, so all I had was like this stuff that was like, had been sitting there for a while. And I told her, well, I'm like, it's not like the freshest, I've kind of had it for like over a year, but you know, if you want it, you could have it. And she's like, yeah, sure. So she has it. And then like, you know, a couple of weeks later, she's like, James, I need some more of that tea. It is so amazing. It's like, I need it. And after I learned what tea drunkenness was, I was kind of thinking, I wonder if that accidentally happened in that situation. And maybe that's why I kind of became, needing another fix of that. So yeah, little ironies of life here. So Lena, do you want to read your poem? Don't forget to unmute yourself though. I heard you nod and say, okay. Or I saw you.
There we go. Well, I have a copy of it on my phone. Can you hear me? Okay. This is called Cherry Blossom Tea, and it's three stanzas. It's Osakura you, brew slowly while mouths water, pink floral ecstasy. Pickled sakura in plum vinegar and sea salt bloom in umami. Dance, sweet frail petals, umbrellas twirl in teacup. Private Hanami. Thank you.
I found a clapping sound effect. But yeah, actually a couple times in this book, we actually had like haiku sets, or interconnected haiku like she just did. So that's another, thing that, haiku offers that's very interesting. And, so thank you for that, Lena. Heidi, ready?
Sure, thanks. I'm here in Wisconsin, and I love tea as well, so I was thrilled to be part of this. My two haiku are on page 23, if you want to follow along. Dance partner, crossword, layout of the universe, solved over tea. And then the second one, ginger spice chai, island of milk and honey, a seventh heaven. Thanks.
Yes, much better with the sound effects there. Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. That was the other thing was, I read all these poems in this book, and then I was in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, going through a farmer's market where there were a bunch of tea stands, and hearing about all the different types of tea in here, I'm like, I want that one, I want that one, I want that one, I want that one. You know, it's one of those things. It's like, I have a whole mountain of it at home. Doesn't matter. I need more, you know. So, Doug, you ready to go?
Sure. I sure am. If you're following along, it's on page 38. I have three. Springtime allergies, remedy, honey, sugar, milk, and hot black tea. slog of winter months, longing for bright orange sun, taste like pico tea. And I don't know if anyone's a fan of Star Trek, The Next Generation. The Federation about to fall. Captain Picard asks, T, Earl Grey, hot.
Yeah, that was always something from Star Trek that stood out to me, particularly the fact that he had it at all hours. So it'd be like, you know, 3 a.m, it'd be like, T, Earl Grey. I'd be like, no wonder you can never sleep, you know? So, Shani, are you here?
Yes, I'm here. Hello, everyone.
Hello. Want to read your poem?
Sure. Not only am I excited to be here, but I love tea as well.
Hey.
Mine is on page 25. I have one. Tea falls, rushing down cliffs of oral transition, liquid passage soothes. Thank you.
Yeah, the clapping sound effect makes up for all the muted people. I know. That's one of the things about the virtual events. It's like, because in a live event, it's like, you know, you can see the crowd much easier and you kind of get the whole response and everything. On here, it's like, oh, there's that window. Okay, this person's not nodding and smiling. That's okay. There's this window. They're nodding and smiling over there. It's a, you know, they're kind of smiling. Oh, that, oh, I don't know. That one looks like they, you know, I've got something hanging from my nose, maybe. No, you know.
But. You get more people in the virtual events, but you don't get to hear them clapping. But you don't have, your hands don't hurt as much by the end of the event. So that is the upside.
Well, I don't know.
And I can say by now, after a year of this, I'm not as nervous as I was before going into a virtual room versus a real room. So there you go.
Yeah.
I did a virtual reading last night as part of something else. And it was, the odd thing was that only the person reading was on video and everybody else was off, videos was off. So they would turn your video on for the applause, but then you would go right back. So yeah. It was like a race of who could turn the video on and clap or snap first. And then it was, and then you couldn't see, like when it was your turn to read, you were reading to a bunch of black boxes with names on them.
Yeah, so you have like no idea what's going on. I mean, I've, you know, that's the thing about it. It's like there's so many different shapes and sizes also of these events, because I've, you know, like a couple of writing groups and things like that have had me come in and give presentations to people, like not necessarily reading my poetry, but talking about like publishing or, you know, marketing your books and stuff like that. And sometimes I've done it to groups of like, you know, over capacity for like a regular Zoom thing, like over 100 people were there, but I didn't see any of them because there was no video on for any of them. There was just the chat box, and then it was like the host and like two other presenters and three were on video. And so like it's like you have no idea how you're doing because you're getting no feedback from the audience except in the chat box. Somebody's like, oh, that's a good point, or oh, I like that, or you did that. But it's like, you know, it's like, so I'm just here, I'm like, I gotta like, you know, suck my energy from like, you know, I need to suck my energy from tea or something, because like in a live crowd you get to like, you know, the audience, you know, you give the audience energy, they give you energy. It's like this symbiosis. Virtually we're all still figuring it out, you know. So, and then like, I've been to other virtual events where it's like, there's like 4,000 people in the, you know, the chat box or whatever, to like one person presenting, you know, like something like a big seminar, or like a, you know, business leader or something like that doing that. So it's a whole different thing, but it's funny because we have like these small, like, you know, 5-10 person workshops where we could all be on video in poetry, or you got like these big things. And yeah, it's all like a thing we're all figuring out, you know.
At least we don't have masks on. At least I could see your face now, right?
That's true. Yeah, that's good. But yeah, but Nick, to your point though, I always said that if your hands don't hurt at the end of it, it wasn't a good poetry event, you know. So
you're saying none of the online ones are good poetry events?
Exactly. No, but no, we need to clap more and like, you know, hurt our hands a little bit more. But yeah, but speaking of Nick, it would be your turn to read your kiku.
Well, I didn't RSVP. No, I'm just kidding. I'll read mine. Between mud and leaves, hot water transmutes itself, seething with fresh life.
You know, I guess actually one way to keep your hands from hurting at a live event is, you know, get like a, you know, an app on your phone for the applause and just do it that way so you don't actually have to hurt your hand.
Or wear gloves.
that though. I don't know. That could still kind of hurt your hands, you know? So, all right, let's see. Did anybody else pop in last minute who I haven't seen yet? Oh, George Schaefer, are you here?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, George. George Schaefer from Pennsylvania. You ready to read your Tiku?
Yeah. Let me actually get it. I did order a copy. It's not getting delivered till tomorrow.
Oh, no. Yeah, I know. Some people have them. Some people don't. It's one of those things. That's another problem with the virtual event. At a live event, it's like you have the book there. So it's just like, hey, get the book here. And if you didn't buy one, you could still borrow a copy. Online, it's all like, yeah.
Well, what I do is I use my phone for the events because I don't have a laptop yet. And then I'll keep the submissions in a folder on my computer. So that's what I had to do. Now, when I get a laptop, I'll be able to have the audio on the computer. It'll be a little bit better. Yeah. But yeah. It's weird. It's like on one hand, you're getting to do. I've done some of these Zoom with people from all over the world, but then I prefer the live, you know, in the flesh.
Yeah.
Okay. I got him up, and there were two of them. Spot of tea in hand, English girl on the telly. Divinity found. Didn't raise my pinky, lovely yet subtle flavor dancing on my tongue. Thank you.
Thank you, George. And yeah, we've had people actually from all over the place in this one, even though it's only been about like 13, 14 people throughout this whole thing. We've had, because Nick is down there in Virginia, Lena's in North Carolina, Linda Simone's from Texas, you're from Pennsylvania, Heidi's from Wisconsin, a bunch of us are here from New York.
Florida.
So what is that, seven states? Did I just count right? Let's see. New York, Virginia, North Carolina, Texas, Pennsylvania, Florida, Wisconsin. Yeah, seven states. So 14 people, seven states in this reading. That's... you know, pretty impressive in terms of geography.
James, I'd like to invite everybody to visit my Instagram page because I paint watercolors on recycled tea bags. Oh. And so it's called Tea Bag Art Essay for San Antonio.
Now, could you put it in the chat so people could, follow the link? So, yeah. No, that's one of the interesting things, though, about the variance in terms of geography, because, the virtual stuff eliminates the geography barrier. But, because Nick and I were, we did virtual events actually before COVID hit. We didn't do them through Zoom usually, though. We actually did them podcast style or audio style, because we did a bunch of virtual seminars on, more like topics related to publishing and things like that, not exactly readings. So we were kind of used to that, but we also, toured up and down the East Coast. So we would do poetry events, and in a bunch of different states. So we got used to the, seeing people and poets from all over the place. So when COVID hit, there were a bunch of people who were like, oh, with the Zoom, I'm getting to see poets from all over the place. And, we were like, oh yeah, we kind of had done that already, but this was like a new way to do it. So that was cool. But yeah, I mean, although we did get to see a lot of people we hadn't seen because we, done some with people in the UK or people, in Canada, New Zealand, like all these different countries. So it was really cool. And actually I forgot Guillermo, he didn't read his poem, but he was here for a little bit and he was from Delaware. So actually we had eight states represented in this. So let's, take an accounting of that. Cause yeah, a few people popped in, but didn't actually read. So, although speaking
of reading, a number of like down my area, Moonstone, when they do the anthologies, what they're doing when they go back to live is that they're going to work on making sure that they still have the laptop there. So that you'll have the live audience, but then you'll also have people that will be able to attend through Zoom. And then I guess if they read, you just have to maybe turn so that they, face the screen outward or whatever. So it's hopefully it's something that good will come out of something bad.
Yeah. I know the like the problem with combining the live and the virtual events though sometimes is you're very dependent on technology. Like if there's a glitch, because we've actually done meetings and stuff or workshops where people zoomed in from long distance when most of us were there live, and sometimes there were like issues with that. But I mean, although there's a lot of people though who do the live event, but they either record it or they have like Zoom in the background so people can kind of watch it even if they can't participate from far away. So yeah, there's a lot you can do with it. You can expand the audience, you can record it and show it later. So yeah, I mean that's, you know, that's the only thing you can do is try to pull the good from the bad. So now I have a couple of Tiku that I have in here. So now it's my turn to read. But does that mean I have to do the clapping sound effect for myself? That seems a little bit like arrogant. But
you should have sent me the clapping sound effect so I could do it for you.
That's true. Hold on.
Next time.
No. I'll put it in the chat. Hold on. Here we go. Because it was just a YouTube video. There you go. Oh, how did that go directly to? No, I don't want to go. I just said
that. See, this is what you were talking about with technology.
I know, right? It's like, okay.
So wait, now how do I make it play in the Zoom call?
You just play it in the background, let your microphone pick it up.
That's not going to work. I have one of my speakers on. I have my headset.
Oh, whatever. Fine, I'll do it. But sorry. I'll do it, but I'll pretend you're doing it so I don't seem as arrogant.
Right. We'll be more prepared next time.
Yeah.
I can do it for you if you like.
Or we can,
yeah,
we some, can just yeah, all unmute and actually clap.
I like that idea the best.
Which one?
Everybody unmutes and claps for you.
Yeah, how about that one? There we go. Okay. So this is my first Tiku. Chaotic pondering, reined in and channeled by the brood leaf's guidance. Thank you everybody for that effort. And now the second one. Simple games of chess or whole empires conceived in one short tea break.
We love you.
Yay. It's good to be loved. Who did that? I definitely didn't. No. So, but yeah, that last one in particular, because there have been plenty of times I've actually been sitting like in a cigar lounge, you know, with a cigar and a cup of tea and just kind of brainstorming stuff or planning out like, you know, book tours that were going in like 7 or 8 different states and just kind of thinking like it's funny what you can do sitting in one location just with concentrated thought and how you can turn that into something, you know, much bigger than that. So, you know, I kind of think about like, I wonder how many, you know, like how many, you know, emperors and kings and conquerors and generals, like, you know, sat there with a cup of tea just pondering their war strategies before they like took over entire kingdoms or whatever. And it's like, you know, can you blame the tea? It's like, is the tea the causality, or, you know, like how do you do that? So let's see. Did anybody else pop in last minute, or did I miss anybody on here? I don't think so, but just double checking. No, it looks like everybody got to read their TQ. So while I got you here now, and y'all can feel free to unmute, but yeah, because I know that some people gave the thumbs up when I asked at first. But so those of you who got to, you know, the Poet Tea samples and tried them, what did y'all think of them?
Great. Really excellent.
Yeah. So it was there one in particular that you preferred? Because nope. I mean,
Snowy Evening.
Snowy Evening. The white tea. Yeah, that was the one that I think somebody accidentally got tea drunk on. but the one that went out there, that one wasn't sitting around the shelf for as long as the old one was. So you probably just got it. You probably just got the legitimate flavor of it. But yeah, white tea is it's a rare, you know, tea that's grown. Well, Nick would know better the altitude of that. You know.
I don't know the exact altitude, but it's in the way it's prepared. It's probably the hardest tea to prepare, but it's also the one that has the least done to it. It also tends to contain buds more often, have more buds than other types of tea will.
I enjoyed the white tea as well. I wonder if it's you know, just a popular one compared to all the others. If it's more popular than the other ones, but the white tea was good.
Yeah. No, you know, it's funny because, like, there's, in terms of, like, you know, the most popular ones, it's really kind of hard to determine because, like, the people are different. And so, like, I don't know what exactly it is that makes it up, but different people seem really attracted to, like, you know, one or two of them in particular, and like not so much to one or the other, but it's always different, because then the people it'll be like opposite for other people. It's just the way that kind of people are. But I mean, the white tea, it's also the one that we get in the least amount, so people kind of like it from the ready. Ooh, dog.
People tend to feel really strongly about Snowy Evening one way or the other too. Like, the people who it really like it, and the people who don't, it's the mint, I think, that the people who don't like it tend to be people who don't like mint.
Yeah,
I really do like minty tea. I like the peppermints and I love minty tea.
Yeah,
especially for a pick me up in the morning. So
I like the Raven a lot. I usually get that from you at the live events.
That's because the Raven's the best one.
Yeah.
It's objectively the best.
Yes. I would agree with Nick on that. I like, that's my favorite of all of them. There's one I can't try because I have a nut allergy. And
the Dante's Inferno?
Yeah, yeah. It has nuts in it, so I always have to be careful with that with blends. So
yeah.
But I do like the Raven a lot. That I think is my favorite of all of the ones that I have tried.
Yeah, no, I really like I like all of them. Like, I really like the Raven also, but there's different environments for some of them, because I like the Raven more when it's actually colder weather out for some reason. It feels more like a fall tea to me in a lot of ways. Like around Halloween, it's totally awesome, and you know, during the winter months, it's great. You know, the green tea is more like my daily pick-me-up tea, kind of like, you know, you were saying, because, you know, there's just something about that flavor that always happens. But yeah, like a good book near a fire with the Raven, I think is really good. And yeah, Dante's Inferno, I know it has, you know, there's some trace almonds in there, which is why, you know, can't do that. But yeah, that one's also the naturally non-caffeinated one, because, you know, we don't have any technically decaf ones, but that one's non-caffeinated because, you know, rooibos tea is technically an herb, not actually the tea leaf. And so it's naturally non-caffeinated, because a lot of people don't realize that decaf stuff actually started out as caffeinated. They just brewed all the caffeine out of it before they actually sell it to you, even though there's usually still a small trace of the caffeine in there. So you know, the non-caffeinated means there never was caffeine in there to begin with.
Yeah, most teas, when you do the first steeping, it takes almost all the caffeine out of the leaves, or most of it. So that is one trick. If you want to avoid the caffeine, just give it a rinse. You'll get most of it out of the leaves. You'll still have some, like James mentioned, but that's basically how they make decaf tea.
Yeah, and that's also why, because, you know, with loose leaf tea, you can brew it over and over again. I'll, you know, with a half an ounce of the tea, I could probably get five pots out of that if I keep brewing it within a week. But, you know, the first one, it's I'll get ooh, all the caffeine energy. The other one, it's it's more the flavor and the relaxation than the caffeine you get after the first brewing. So, yeah, anybody else, any thoughts on, you know, any of the tea? Because, I mean, we're mostly just curious, because we always like when people, you know, Doug, did you get to try the tea that I gave you yesterday, or is that too soon?
No, I didn't have a chance yet. No.
So you were unprepared for the reading then. I see how it
is. Well, in that respect, yeah. I'm excited to try it, absolutely. But no, I didn't have a chance. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, in some ways I'm envious of you, because you get to try it for the first time. I don't get to do that again now every time it's you know.
Do you guys have any plans to make an oolong?
Yeah. Yes, actually, we have had plans for quite a while to make an oolong that we were tentatively going to call Jabberwocky. But we've had COVID happened and slowed things down. Mm-hmm. Also, kind of raised the price of tea, which, you know. But then again, it raised the price of everything, so whatever. But you know, we've kind of had a lot of different flavors that we've been experimenting with and sampling and all that stuff. But then the bookstore kind of happened, so that's kind of taken up some focus. So basically, there's a lot of stuff, both tea and anthology related and book launch related and all that stuff related, that we're kind of behind on at the moment, because the bookstore has been kind of taking the priority. But once that's up and running, there's going to be, you know, a lot of stuff that we've been meaning to do will come out. And actually, not that I should mention this at a tea event, but
you traitor.
But we actually also have a Bard's Brew brand of coffee. So, ooh. I know Yeah, no, yes, clap because it's good marketing, but don't clap because it's a tea event. You know, it's one of those. So,
which makes me wonder where is Rufio from Hook? He was all excited about the tea.
Yeah, you know what? I'll actually share that video. Hold on, let me go find it. Yeah, Nick, tell that joke.
Which one? Okay. Well, did you hear about the scarecrow went to the job interview? They asked him if he was any good at what he did. He says, yeah, I'm outstanding in my field. It's not really seasonal, but, you know. you know why Old MacDonald lost at Scrabble, right? E-I-E-I-O.
Oh, yeah? Well, your mama's so dumb, she thought the hippocampus was a dormitory at the zoo.
I've not heard that one, I don't think.
I made that one up. Okay, so that's the video. I'm going to actually play it. So for those of you who...
Here we go.
Oh, hold on. All right. For those of you who don't know Dante Bosco, he played Rufio in the movie Hook alongside Robin Williams. He was also the voice of Prince Zuko, who is, the Fire Lord, or the Prince of the Fire Nation in Avatar The Last Airbender. He's an actor, but he's also a poet. So, spoken word poet. Now, let me see if I can actually. Yeah, whatever. I'll just play the audio. You all can watch the. No. Actually, hold on. Technical difficulties. 1 second.
Click share screen.
That's what I'm trying to do. If I can find.
Oh, it's not letting you pick the right window.
Yep, I think I got it though. Hold on.
We got there.
We got Dante Bosco with Dante's Inferno.
Dante's Inferno poetry. It's the hottest new thing on the market. The poetry late night writing session is at hand.
Rufio! 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 Yeah, a few years ago, we had him out for an event at the Walt Whitman Birthplace, and, you know, Dante Bosco, so of course, had to show him Dante's Inferno Poetry, and yeah, he loved it, and, gave him some, and he went home, and he's like, I wrote a whole bunch with it, so yeah, you see, that's the thing about Poetry. If you have no poetic talent whatsoever, just drink a cup of Poetry, and you will instantaneously, be Walt Whitman, so.
Or Emily Dickinson.
Or Emily Dickinson, or Dante, or Edgar Allan Poe, or
Anne Sexton.
Yeah,
well, he was already Dante, so that doesn't really count.
Yeah, that's true. So another poet named Dante. So, poetry. It seems like anybody else have any thoughts on any of the tea or poetry or how poetry and tea goes together? Since we've still got a few minutes left, willing to hear anything? We got a good. Good, intelligent, tea-loving group here. So,
I was just going to throw out there, which it's not poetry, though, is I had read this book called Tea Girl of Hummingbird Lane or something like that. And while it's a novel, it was an unbelievable education into tea from a cultural point of view. And it was a tough story, but it was really eye-opening about tea over generations at such a deeper level than I had ever heard of or read or saw before. So just throwing that out there.
And what was it called again?
The Tea Girl of Hummingbird Lane.
Okay, I think I've actually heard of that, but I haven't actually read it, but I think that the title does sound familiar. So
I'm looking up the author because I read it a while ago. So 1 second. It's Lisa C.
Okay.
I'll put it in the chat.
Cool. Yeah, I mean that's something that Nick and I discuss a lot about how like tea goes extraordinarily deep to the point it's like to almost a ridiculous level. Like it in some ways it goes even deeper than like wine. In terms of like the years and the locations and the vintage and all that and the aging and all that stuff, because you know, I mean, like, you know, Nick, for example, he's been a tea enthusiast as long as I've known him, which was like third grade. But, you know, he even said that, like, it wasn't until, like, you know, so many years ago that he realized even just how deep it actually went.
Yeah. I mean, even down to like this, the specific gardens the tea was taken from or the age of the trees can affect things. So you have, and you have tea villages that their teas go for insane amounts of money. Like $20 a gram, insane amounts of money. And then you have these other villages that will label their stuff as that famous village and try to pass it off. You know, you have knockoffs, of course.
Yeah, counterfeit tea.
But when you have trees that are 1,000 years old or even like 800 years old, you know, that the prices can get up there. But yeah, there's just so much to it. There, and every time I thought that I knew everything there was to know, I'd find this other layer. And it's like, wow, I've just scratched the surface.
Yeah, it's like onions, you peel it back. You know, because the thing is, like, you know, most people, their experience with tea is usually like one of those crappy tea bags that they have out there, which a lot of people don't know that that's usually the what? Oh, I heard somebody said something. But that's usually like what's left over from, you know, the actual loose leaf. Like that's kind of the stuff that's really like, you know, the extra that they put into the tea bag. It's kind of like a way to salvage it.
It's the waste, basically.
Yeah, basically that's the tea's, you know, waste, essentially. So that's most people's exposure to tea. And so that's it. But like, you know, when you get like the actual good, like loose leaf stuff and it's brewed the right way, it's like an entirely different experience. So yeah, it's just another interesting layer. I mean, you could say the same thing about poetry. It's like most people, you know, their first experience with poetry is probably not the, you know,
Hallmark cards.
Yeah, either Hallmark cards or that 2 weeks that they covered it in grade school where the teacher didn't even care about it and kind of tried to brush through it, and so it wasn't, you know, presented in the best way. And so that's why some people like a poetry, you know. It's like, but when you really dive into it and get the real experience, it's like, because we've had plenty of times where we've been on tour. And, you know, we do, you know, a lot of community anthologies in different regions and states. And so you'll get like people who will come out to be in the anthology and then they'll bring their family and their friends. And the family and the friends are there really more for support, not because like, ooh, a poetry reading, you know, so they show up. But then we've had a lot of people after the event who've come up to us and they're like, you know, I wasn't expecting to enjoy this, but I really did. You know, they were like, wow, I never thought poetry could actually be like, you know, good. like they didn't word exactly like that, but that essentially was like the sentiment that they were saying. And you know, we've gotten that like quite a lot, like, you know, haven't we, Nick?
Yeah, in fact, that we were in South Carolina a couple months ago and this couple came in and the man who was clearly like the guest of the poet did not want to be there. The first thing he asked is where he could get a drink.
Yeah, literally, he comes in, he's like, is there a bar around here? I need a drink. Like, he had, like, this angry puss on his face. He was, like, you could tell he was, like, dragged there, like, by, a, you know, a leash, pretty much.
Yeah, but by the end of it, he was engaged. He was chatting with people. He was complimenting people on their poems. He was having a great time. Yeah. And it was great to see that evolution.
And then on the way out, he wouldn't stop talking to us, you know. Like,
yeah.
like, I need a drink, like all angry. Then on the way, I was like, yo, man, this was so much fun, you know. It was like, it's like you talk about like, yeah, like instant transformation or whatever. But yeah,
we do panels our first ever Otakon, which is a convention of Japanese culture and anime. We did a panel on Japanese poetry there called Haiku and Beyond. And we were standing outside the room, getting ready to go in, waiting for the previous panel to finish. And these two young people came over. They looked at the sign to see what was going on there. He goes, Haiku and Beyond. No, thank you. And just walked away with the two of us standing there. It's like, yeah, poetry doesn't always have the best reputation.
Yeah.
But, well, okay, yeah. James, I got one movie for you. It's Kingdom of Conquerors on Amazon Prime.
Oh.
It's about, of course, conquering, like Genghis Khan, and it also has poison. Mm-hmm. You'll like this one. Also, Marco Polo on Netflix is another one about conquering and tea.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
I enjoyed that one, Marco Polo. I was sad.
Yeah, I did too. I learned a lot. I didn't know about his adopting foreigners.
Yeah, so see, tea has been responsible for lots of conquests. So
yeah, the Mongols were known for doing that. They would like conquer a group and then instead of like subjugating the people or killing them, they would take anyone with talent and they'd move them to a different part of the empire and actually utilize their talents.
Mm-hmm. I know. It's crazy. History is a very interesting thing.
Now there's a Mongolian rock band that's conquering America. They're coming to Asheville on the 8th, but they're going to America, to New York and other states too. So if Genghis Khan couldn't conquer us, the rock band probably will.
I read something recently about the British covert agent that had to infiltrate China to find a cultivar of the tree tea that could work in the Indian climate, and all of the intrigue that went on with that until they found the Assam variety that actually worked there, where he was like undercover in these tea villages in China and trying to like figure out if they had their botanists working on it. It was, I don't remember the actual name of the article that I read, but it was really interesting.
Yeah. No, I know. It's crazy, like, how many, like, still, like, you know, totally hidden secrets there are in, like, certain, you know, regions that, you know, basically the outside world is still ignorant of. Because same thing with martial arts. There's, like, Tai Chi villages in parts of China where it's, like, that particular type of Tai Chi goes back, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years, and only the people who live in, like, a small village there actually know that particular style. And, you know, they don't share with anybody outside of it. And so you got, like, people, like, literally trying to peek over the walls to, like, see what they're doing and stuff. It's, you know, it's funny. So
my introduction to tea was through the tea ceremony in that was involved in what was the equivalent of a black belt test in a Chinese martial art. It was a tea ceremony involved in that. So that was one of the first times that I had really good tea, really good loose leaf tea.
Yeah, I know, entirely different level. And yeah, the tea ceremony is like an example of, like, you know, how precise and, you know, completely, like, to the point and detailed it is, you know, because, like, it's the idea of, like, conscious living, like, every movement, every bit of energy you expend is done deliberately. Like, it's not like, you know, in modern Western culture, I feel like we're pretty bad at that. We expend a lot of energy and a lot of focus and a lot of very easily distracted different ways, you know, especially because we have our phones that are constantly taking our attention from whatever we're doing and all that, and, like, ADD up the wall. So yeah, there is definitely something to be said about, like, you know, deliberate, complete, utter focus. And usually the results show that, you know, like, again, a cup of tea from a tea ceremony versus, like, a bag of Liptons, you know. It's like,
you know, in Morocco they use gunpowder green tea and of course fresh mint, and they have their own you know, the green teas everywhere in North Africa. That's their drink, really.
Mm-hmm. yeah gunpowder green, where they, you know, they have it actually look at, you know, those little, you know, balls or whatever. Yeah those are good. I've had those several times.
There was a store, a Kenyan tea store by where I used to live in the city, that was really interesting, because there's a lot of they started drinking tea or planting tea there when the French were there, and they've just kept it, and they have their own tea culture that's similar but different. And the teas, there's different varieties and a lot of rooibos, because they, you know, but also they're growing green teas. They have their own, what would be similar to matcha powders that they grind from their tea leaves. And it was really good, and it was really different than a lot of the teas that we're used to drinking.
Yeah, yeah, it's funny how through history so many, you know, culinary, you know, or drinks or, like, cultural things that we now, like, you know, completely love world over came about just because this one culture either invaded or was invaded by another culture. And so, like, one aspect of this culture mixed with another aspect of this culture then created something, you know, like a complete blend or whatever. Like, that's how chicken tikka masala came about, you know, which is a staple in Indian food now, but that actually was British influence on Indian food. You know, and now it's, like, just considered, like, a base Indian food plate. Like, it's funny, like, again, getting, you know, something good from the bad, because it's like you have all these invasions and all this horrible stuff, but then somehow, like, it, you know, it marries things culturally that, you know, we now, like, enjoy the world over. So it's very interesting how that type of stuff works. So, but yeah, so we're pretty much out of time at this point, but thank you all for showing up and you know, reading your tea coup. This has been a wonderful event. You could all unmute and we could actually do, like, a clap right now for that.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. We love you.
Thank you. I love you all
too. Thank you.
And you know, thank you all for being a part of this book. I think it came out really good. It's going to look great in the bookstore. You know, I'm going to be having the with some poetry, have some bundles over there. We're looking forward to, you know, hearing more from you guys soon. And, you know, there's lots of other projects. Plenty of you were involved in so many things, chapbook challenges, other anthologies, poetry readings, et cetera. So we'll be seeing more of you guys in the near future. So, and when the bookstore is open, you're all going to hear about it. So thank you again, everybody.
Nice to see you all.
Wishing you all the best. Nice to see you.
Bye. Take care.
Bye, everyone.
Bye, doggy.